ultimately it triumphs. Put it in the context, the anti-war movement of World War I, with the anti-slavery movement. Britain, maybe people don't realize, ended slavery decades before the United States.
They did, and it was in large part a result of two things. One is slave revolts in the West Indies, something that tends to get written out of the history books, and a remarkably feisty, wonderfully organized, popular anti-slavery movement in England, which really pioneered all kinds of techniques that community organizers still use today. You know, they made the first political poster, and you've probably seen it. It's that diagram of a slave ship with the slaves' bodies packed very tightly inside. Well, this was a movement that was successful. Slavery did finally come to an end in the British Empire and elsewhere in the world. The challenge for me in writing about the First World War was, could I write as interesting and as gripping a story about a movement that didn't prevail because the pacifists were not able to stop the war? I felt still it was an important story to tell, because if we only tell the stories of the movements that are victorious, we're going to be leaving a lot of things out of history. And sooner or later, I hope that people who want to stop all war will be victorious. And I think that they're going to have a better chance of doing so if they know some of the history of people who have been involved in that struggle before.
In a piece you wrote, Adam, called Echoes of a Bygone War, the eerie thing about studying World War I is the way you can't help but be reminded of today's headlines. Would you say the anti-war movement has failed today? I mean, we are involved in the longest continuous war in the history of this country, Afghanistan, led by a president who campaigned against war, the other war in Iraq, and yet we're still in Iraq as well.
We've certainly failed so far to stop both wars, and I feel very sad about that. And I feel, you know, as we were talking a moment ago, that if there were a way that American people could visually see that toll, like looking at some of these gigantic cemeteries, this is something that might bring it to a stop sooner. Something else that I think would bring the wars to a stop sooner is, although I don't see any practical likelihood of this happening, is if we went back to having a draft. I think that's one of the reasons why the Vietnam War came to an end, that in addition to the tremendously stiff resistance that the Vietnamese put up, there were hundreds of thousands of people in the streets here because those of us who were of draft age at that time knew we didn't want to go and fight in this war. When it was a question of putting our lives on the line for this war, that drew in people's families as well. But the way that you know, our country has worked out to wage wars now, it's first of all done by, you know, all-volunteer military, and then by these things that sort of further seem to distance us from it, like, you know, drone attacks, you know, where there are no Americans at risk, and the only casualties are, you know, the people on the ground in these countries. So it's a tough job, but I still think, you know, we need to figure out how to bring these wars to a halt. Afghanistan, you can see there was a motive at the beginning. It was a reasonable enough one for the U.S. to get involved there. This was a government that was sheltering the people who planned the September 11th attacks. But by this point, I think even a lot of people high in the U.S. government understand that we are generating more jihadists by remaining engaged there.
We're going to continue in a post-show conversation. We'll post it online at democracynow.org. Adam Hochschild, our guest, To End All Wars, his book. Happy birthday to Jessel Noor. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Eve with your concert billboard for Monday, May 9th through Thursday, May 12th. It's a quiet week. On Monday, Kinky Friedman is at the Highline Ballroom in New York City at 8 p.m. The On Your Radar series with Amy Spies, The Winterlings, Fraser Anderson at the Living Room in Manhattan at 7 p.m. That's on Tuesday. On Wednesday, the 11th, Bruce Cockburn at the Bolton Center in Bayshore. Manchester Orchestra with Cage the Elephant, 6:30 p.m. at Terminal 5 in New York City. And on Thursday the 12th, James Blake at Le Paysan Rouge in Manhattan at 11 p.m. And right here on WUSB at 7 p.m. on the Long Island Sound, Mr. Hank Stone. And that's it for Monday through Wednesday. You can check out all our shows at www.wusb.fm/cbb. And if you're a band, venue, or promoter looking to have a show announced, feel free to use our contact form on our website. Click Contact and Concert Billboard. Thank you for listening to WUSB Stony Brook and the Concert Billboard.
Yeah, you see, that's the problem when somebody fades from the spotlight. Back in the 80s, everybody knew it was Bruce Cockburn, not Cockburn, Cockburn, because there was a whole big PR campaign to pronounce it right. You know, I'll never forget that. The late night public service announcements, the infomercials, all that kind of thing. People got it, and because he didn't put out albums for a while, we warned him. It was inevitable. But yeah, Bruce Cockburn. Good that he's back. Anyway, 1 minute after 6 o'clock, listening to WUSB Stony Brook Time for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, where it's such a nice day outside. Oh my God, if every day was like this, well, it probably wouldn't be so good, because every day would be like this. But every now and then you get one of these nice, bright, sunny, crisp days where there's no humidity whatsoever and the temperature is comfortable and not too cold, not too warm. And you just feel like you can get a lot done. But you usually don't, because you're too busy enjoying the day one way or another. Yeah, so none of this demonic fog, torrential rains, sudden heat, or lingering cold. This is just the way it should be right now. And hopefully you're enjoying it if you're listening to us locally. If you're not listening to us locally, hopefully you're enjoying whatever it is that's being dished out for you. I can only imagine what that could be. Spring, though, it's an amazing time of year, because things start to happen. Things start to grow and to come back. I just discovered something. This is kind of cool, actually. I have a satellite service. I have American satellite service, and I also have Canadian satellite service. I'm always talking about the Canadian satellite service, because it's way cool to be able to get all these different programs and things that Americans can't see. But I also have the American one. I'm not really sure why I have the American one. I think because it interfaces with a TiVo, and TiVo is a really good interface, and it's kind of cool. But what has happened the last year, and what's apparently happening now, is that when the leaves come out on the trees, it blocks the satellite signal. Now, you might say, well, Manuel, why don't you just cut the branch? Well, you know, it's not so easy, okay? You think I didn't think about that? Of course I thought about that. It's the first thing I thought about. It's not my tree. It's a tree far away, someone else's tree. And I don't want to get into a whole big thing about, hey, can I come and cut the top of your branch off so I can see television? No, I'm not going to do that. What I discovered, though, I don't really need this, because I have the Canadian dish, and I can survive just fine for the entire period where there are leaves on the trees, which generally goes from about May to October or so. And I discovered that you can call the company that provides this service and suspend your service for up to 6 months without any cost to you. Take a little vacation and not get charged anything. So that's really cool. So in addition to saving any cost for cutting a branch off of a tree, now I'm saving 5 or 6 months of exorbitant cost. And I can pretty much get everything that I would have gotten anyway through different means, and Canadian sources as well. So that's kind of cool. That's one thing I'm doing differently this year is realizing that, hey, I don't have to suffer lousy signal and expensive service. I can have no signal and no service and get along just fine. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, you don't have to pay for certain things. You don't have to get enslaved to what everybody else has, whether it be smartphones, exorbitant bills of one sort or another, mass media. Yeah. Break free of the chains and just walk away. But spring is more than just fading television signals. It's all kinds of wildlife. Not always convenient. Yeah, not always convenient. Okay, what happened the other day? This happens every spring. All right, it happens. I'm not talking about the termites. Yeah, termites swarm every spring. And I had somebody tell me, I had somebody who knows the business, Emmanuel, you don't actually have termites infesting your house. They just once a year come out of the pipes for some reason. Literally, they come out of the sink. And they shed their wings, and they have a grand old time marching all over the place. It happens for one night every year in the early spring, and then they're gone. And I don't know how they got into the pipes. Maybe they're coming out of the ground or something. The main nest is somewhere wherever the pipes go. I don't know, but apparently I'm not in danger right now. But no, it's not the termites. It's the ants. Yeah, ants come in the spring as well. You just see them walking around, the little tiny ants. I'm not sure, are they the carpenter ants or the big ones that run around? One of them are the carpenter ants. Let's call these ones the carpenter ants for now. Okay, they move rather slowly. They're small, and there tend to be a lot of them. And if you happen to leave something out when they're around, you'll soon find out how many of them there are. I made that mistake last week. I just left something out. It wasn't much. Like on a plate, the remains of a pizza crust. Remains. Not even very much at all. And the next day, when I walked into the room, there were 1,000 ants all over this. It was the biggest thing in their lives. And they had all come from who knows where. But they were there. And I had to basically get rid of them. Now, I don't like to spray. I don't like to use insecticide. And I can't believe I have to explain why to people when I say I don't like to use insecticide. It's poison. It kills things. All right, and if you're around it, and if you have animals that are around it or children that are around it, they inhale the poison as well. And yeah, you could say, no, it's poison just meant for insects. Well, you know, poison, I don't think is that intelligent. And if you surround yourself with various types, you'll find yourself afflicted with various side effects as well. So unless it's absolutely essential and there's no other way, think of other methods, and the best method I can think of is keeping things clean and making sure that there's nothing there for the ants to find. So I got rid of whatever was there, very small amount. It took 2 days for all the ants to get over it. They were just sort of milling around looking for remains, and then they all just disappeared. They're somewhere. I don't know where they are. They're someplace. If I put something down, maybe they'll come again. Or maybe they won't. Maybe they've moved on. I noticed in a different room, they had fanned out. They were searching the entire house. Two little ants just came to a particular part of the desk where I was working. And I could see they were just walking around, sort of sniffing out all the corners, two of them. And this was right after the massive amount that I had discovered. So I got a little bit annoyed, and I think I can say this. I took care of them. Yeah, I made sure they weren't going to bother anybody anymore. And I don't usually do things like this. I don't usually resort to such tactics. But in that particular case, and I think I was justified, in given my current state of mind at the time, I'm not apologizing. That's what I did. But I knew what was going to happen. And this is something weird about ants. They communicate in some bizarre way. Like, for instance, when they found the remains of a pizza crust, it wasn't 1,000 ants suddenly walking through the house saying, hey, look at this. It was a couple of scouts that found something, communicated back to the rest of their club or whatever kind of group they have together there, and they gave directions on how to get there. So I knew what happened when these two ants that had come out to investigate the desk had disappeared. I knew their disappearance would be investigated. And sure enough, within 2 hours, there were two more ants. Always two, just two ants. And they showed up. They were doing the exact same thing, looking around. I knew if I did the same thing to these guys, it was just going to open up a whole kettle of worms. Not real kettle of worms, obviously, but yeah, a whole investigation with more ants coming to see what was going on. So I just let them do their thing, sniff around, look for any evidence or thing. I was careful, though. There was no evidence. And after a while, they disappeared. They were gone. But then a little bit later on, two more came. And these were higher up. I could tell because they were a little bit bigger and they obviously had more authority. And they were looking at the scene now, trying to figure out what happened to their two friends. And they looked around. They were pretty thorough. They were there for about an hour and a half. And then they left. Investigation closed. They have not been back. And that's how you got to deal with insects. It's a meeting of the minds. But like I said, you know, you want to avoid any kind of evil chemicals as much as possible, because they can definitely have side effects of all sorts. There's only one time that I didn't do this, and I tried everything I could to avoid it, but that was the summer of the millipedes, and I'd rather really not remember that. It's just nothing I did would stop them from coming to a particular part of the house. This was downstairs, actually. There was moisture someplace, couldn't find out where. It was outside, but they somehow were coming inside, and millipedes are really, they're the long worm-like insects that when you touch them, they curl up into a little spiral. Yeah, it's really cute for a little while, and then it gets kind of old after you find masses of them. So yeah, I had to hire out for somebody who really did something, and they never came back. Yeah, spring. It's wonderful, isn't it? And it's not just insects. It's all kinds of it's mammals as well. A couple of weeks ago, I was woken up by the cat meowing at the door incessantly. This does not happen very often. In fact, it doesn't happen. And there was just something. Was the house on fire? Was UPS at the door? What? this is really kind of unusual. And it was incessant enough to wake me up. And I opened the door, and what do you think is there? Well, there's the cat, but in front of the cat is a mouse. Yeah, he caught a mouse. But more importantly than catching the mouse is the fact that he had to show it to me. He had to show it, had to wake me up and show it to me. It was that important. And I've since read up on this and had a number of people talk to me about it. They said that this is a gift and you're supposed to accept the gift. But in this particular case, no, it was not a gift, because when I tried to accept this offering at 7 a.m, that's exactly what I want, is a dead mouse. He grabbed it back and just trotted away. The only purpose was to show what he had done. It was pride. Animals have pride. Yeah. There are all kinds of things that animals have that I think we're not aware that they have. Pride is definitely one of them. I think a sense of humor. Animals have a sense of humor. They have jealousy. They have sense of apology. For instance, once when I was playing with the same cat, he inadvertently scratched me, and obviously it hurt. And immediately he just came right forward and was very gentle and purring and all that kind of thing, as if to say, "Wow, I don't know my own strength. Sorry about that." So animals do things like this. It's really it's kind of cool to discover these little attributes. You know, dogs, they know how to put on the cute face to make you give them something. And I always wonder, which came first, the dog's cute face or the human's cute face? Or is a human imitating the dog by looking in a particular manner that makes you think of a puppy? Or did the dog learn this from the human? All kinds of things that if you study animals, you can learn. You can write all kinds of papers and things like that. Whoa, totally didn't expect to be talking about this, but kind of in my mind as we see this pleasant weather, sunshine and warmth and all that kind of thing. But really what's on my mind, and I'd like to take phone calls later on if possible. Would be nice to hear from our listeners as always. What I've been reading up on in the last couple of days, something that made me rather happy, involving Florida, one of my favorite places. Yeah, you know, their idiot governor decided, Rick Scott, he decided he didn't want to accept federal money for high-speed rail for whatever reason. He didn't like Obama. He didn't want to accept money from this foreign Muslim guy. So, no, you know what? Don't give us health care. Don't give us high-speed rail. Don't give us anything. We're just going to give it all back and live our lives without all these things that society tends to like. So basically, the U.S. government has given that $2 billion for high-speed rail to other states. And what that means is that rail services between Washington, D.C. and Boston are going to be improved, as well as rail service in the Midwest and California. And Vice President Joe Biden said these projects will put thousands of Americans to work, save hundreds of thousands of hours for American travelers every year, boost U.S. manufacturing by investing hundreds of millions of dollars in next-generation American-made locomotives and rail cars. Well, you can see why Florida was so aghast at accepting that kind of a thing. So, there are 22 intercity rail projects that will be now funded by this Florida money. $795 million to upgrade the railroad in the heavily used Northeast Corridor. That's between Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, New York, and Boston. And supposedly that will increase speeds to 160 miles per hour in some stretches. Hopefully fairly long stretches. It's not really good to go 160 miles per hour if you're going to do it for 10 miles. $404 million to expand high-speed rail between Detroit and Chicago, saving passengers 30 minutes of travel time. $300 million to advance a high-speed rail project between Los Angeles and San Francisco. This is in addition to other money that's already been allocated. Now, it'll also improve services on commuter rail systems like New Jersey Transit and the Long Island Railroad. So, yeah, that's kind of neat to see that happening. But speaking of the Long Island Railroad, wow. I don't know if people have been following this story, but what happened over the past few days, an Amtrak train derailed as it was traveling in the East River Tunnel between Penn Station and the Sunnyside Yards, I believe. It was an empty train, except for the guy driving it. It was going about 60 miles an hour, and it derailed inside the tunnel. So no end of problems there. But here's the thing. This is the problem that we have here in America with our third world rail system. We only have two tracks connecting Long Island and the Sunnyside Yards with New York City. So that means if something happens to one of those tracks, you're pretty much screwed. And if something were to happen to both of them, forget it. That's how easy it is to cut off rail traffic in this country, because we have so little of it. Just traveling out here to Stony Brook, first of all, it takes forever. The train goes about 35 miles per hour. The diesel part of it. That's how fast it goes. 35 miles per hour. I'm not kidding when I say I've seen bicyclists on roads going past the train as it's going at full speed. True, it was down a hill, but, I mean, come on. I don't understand how, in this particular day and age, something can be so slow. Somebody told me, actually, I haven't been able to look this up, but somebody told me that if you find, you go back to the 1800s in a newspaper, you go to a library, you look at microfilm or find something online, look for the ferry schedules, because that's how people used to get to New York City. There was a ferry, I think, from Patchogue that went to New York City, and it took the same amount of time that today's train takes. That's what I heard. I don't know if that's true, and maybe somebody can do some research and find out. Maybe I'll do some research and find out. But wow, that I'm not surprised. But if you take the train east of Huntington, which is where you have to switch, that's where the electric line ends and the diesel line begins, you'll find that most of the way out to Stony Brook is a single track. And what does that mean? That means you can't have two trains going at the same time. One train has to wait for the other one to pass. And that's why you only have one train every couple of hours during off-peak times. So in addition to costing a lot more than driving, in addition to being a lot slower than driving, the capacity is so limited because so little has been built. And you just have to wonder, if this nation really took it seriously, Like China is doing now. China's going mad building rail everywhere. They're making fools of us. If we took it seriously, how amazing would that be? To be able to hop onto a train almost at any time and get from Stony Brook to the city in about a half hour, get cross country in a day or two, instead of the week it takes now, if you can even manage to find a train that does it at all. I think a lot more people would be moving around a lot more. There'd be less stress, less worry about airlines and things like that. Of course, now there's worry about train sabotage. Because why? Because after the raid on Osama bin Laden, apparently something was found that indicated that Al-Qaeda thought it would be really nifty to derail trains on the 10th anniversary of 9/11. This is what we were fighting here. This kind of planning. to put obstacles on train tracks so that trains would be derailed. And that's the 10th anniversary of 9/11. I think I can say safely now, I think the statute of limitations has passed, that I knew people in high school that planned the same damn thing, that said, wow, we're going to put grocery carts on the train tracks and derail a train. They really were planning on doing this. I don't think they ever did it, or if they tried, they weren't successful. But it's that mentality of just trying to mess things up, acting out in various ways. Sometimes it gets out of hand. Sometimes common sense gets the better of you. But really, this is all Al-Qaeda was capable of planning? Putting obstacles on train tracks. Okay, so as a result of this, the reactionary politicians, what do they get out of this? They get more opportunities to do something stupid. So Senator Chuck Schumer believes if suspected terrorists are too dangerous to be on a plane, they shouldn't be allowed on a train either. He called for increased rail security, said there should be a no-ride list for Amtrak, similar to the no-fly list maintained by the Department of Homeland Security. It would require Amtrak passengers to show photo identification before boarding a train to be checked against the name on their tickets and against list of suspected terrorists. Yeah, okay, a number of things here. First of all, this would only apply to Amtrak. So you're saying it's okay for us to do all kinds of horrible things to the LIRR, New Jersey Transit, Metro North, commuter lines, whatever, just not Amtrak. It's okay on the subway, but not on an intercity train. And how about buses? And how about taxis? And how about school buses and bicycles? Who knows? Where does it end? And, you know, it's entirely possible, based on what I just read. And if Chuck Schumer had been listening, maybe I could ask him, what about this? People were planning on putting obstacles on the track. You know what? You don't have to show ID to do that. You don't have to get a ticket to do that. There's all kinds of ways to do things without actually being a passenger. And you can also be a passenger, be a terrorist, and show identification. It doesn't solve anything. Doesn't solve a damn thing. It just makes more of a police state, more of a surveillance state, more of a fearful state. The fact has always been, people can blow things up. People can cause terrorist acts. The goal is to live in a society where that kind of thing does not happen. Where you can walk in the streets. And when Kyle and I were driving in Canada last year, we were marveling at how easy it was to simply walk into a building of the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, not be searched, see a television program being taped live, be treated with respect, not as suspects. And that's more the kind of society we should be pushing towards rather than all these what-if scenarios. Because you keep thinking, what if? And the what-ifs start to happen. Now, obviously, this common sense, you see somebody doing something extraordinarily suspicious, or you're aware of somebody planning on doing something, you act on that. Happens relatively seldom, but it does happen. But the way to battle it is not by clamping down and making things even more fearful. Now, here's another example. This just happened. You might have heard about this on the news. There were two incidents of train tunnel trespassing over the weekend. And according to this report in the Wall Street Journal, they have nothing to do with terrorism. Oh, really? Okay. Well, how about that? What a surprise. Because I figured anybody walking inside a tunnel would be a terrorist. Who else would be doing that? With such an immense network of subway and commuter rail tunnels running beneath the city's streets and waterways, it's impossible to completely protect the system from intruders. That's according to Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly. It's possible for people to get into the system. We have 5 million people a day that travel on the system, so things of an untoward nature can happen. There are no guarantees, but we're doing more than any other city anywhere to protect ourselves. Correct me if I'm wrong. New York City, don't people live in the subway tunnels? I've seen people walking down those tunnels all my life. And not just subway workers. And I gotta say, I've done it myself. Yeah. Not the kind of tunnel where trains go by, although I do know people have done that. But there was a tunnel, there still is a tunnel, but there was an unused tunnel that linked Manhattan to Roosevelt Island. There was the working subway, and then there was a tunnel, I forget if it was above or below that, and it was completely empty. There weren't even tracks there. And if you hopped over a fence at a particular subway facility and went into a door, which was almost always open, and went downstairs, you could actually gain access to that tunnel and walk all the way to Roosevelt Island. It was the coolest thing in the world. And kids would go in there, smoke pot, do whatever they felt like doing. And you know what? I don't think any of them were terrorists. Yeah, they were trespassers. They were walking around someplace they shouldn't have been walking around. But are there any of you out there that have not done that at some point? That have not experienced that thrill of exploration? That in itself is not a bad thing. Vandalism, yeah, that's bad, and that's something that's frowned upon and should be. Terrorism, yes, also bad, but they're not related to this. Anyway, so these poor guys did what I did what lots of people did, they were arrested on criminal trespass charges early Sunday morning after a Harlem resident saw them sneaking into Manhattan's Second Avenue subway tunnel. And, you know, that one isn't even finished. There are no trains there. So they were doing what we were doing, exploring an unused tunnel. Authorities say the men were part of an urban explorers group and were carrying fireworks with them. Oh, they were carrying fireworks with them. Yeah, Al-Qaeda, what could they possibly be doing with fireworks? Okay, calm down out there. All right. They were carrying fireworks with them to create light for taking photographs. Yeah, I know that sounds a little unusual, but that's their claim. And, you know, I kind of believe it, because what else would you be doing with fireworks underground? It's going to make a lot of noise. And I'm not sure what they mean by fireworks. It might have just been those little sparkler things that little kids hold on to on New Year's in Europe without any big to-do. Anyway, three of these guys were arraigned on Monday. A whole big thing, you know, treating them like criminals, and all they were doing was exploring a tunnel. You know, if somebody had said to me last week, hey, Emmanuel, I know how to get into the Second Avenue subway tunnel. You want to check it out? I would say, sure. What's wrong with that? Let's take a look at some history. The building of the next subway line in New York City. See how the progress is going. That's not all. Second incident, early Sunday, a man was arrested on charges including criminal trespass after being discovered on the PATH train tracks about 200 feet from a Jersey City, New Jersey station. Okay. So he was on the train tracks. Can't tell you the number of times I've walked along train tracks, not the subway tracks, because I don't really like the third rail thing, but out here, for instance, where there is no third rail, walking along the tracks can be kind of peaceful, kind of cool. Of course, you got to keep your eye out. You got to have some common sense. Don't go walking with the iPod blasting into your head with Metallica or something like that, because you don't know which direction the train's going to be coming from or how many of them there are. But no, that's now something that that you really can't do anymore, even though there have been no terrorist acts involving trains in this country. Am I right? I'm not counting how the MTA operates. No, that doesn't count as a terrorist act. It's robbery. There's no question about that. It's robbery. I'm talking about things like making tickets only last for 2 weeks, or keeping money from Metro cards that are unused, figuring out ways to charge you extra for things that shouldn't cost extra, things like that. But that's I digress there. This particular case with the guy walking on the Port Authority train tracks in New Jersey, reports could not be confirmed that the man had walked along the tracks to New Jersey from the World Trade Center station in Lower Manhattan. That would be really cool if he did that. That would be way cool. Can you imagine walking all the way through a train tunnel until you come outside in a different state? I That would be really neat. Anyway, the police commissioner said neither incident was related to terrorism. They reached that conclusion awfully fast, didn't they? I think even they know how silly this whole thing is. So expect to see more of that kind of thing, that kind of nonsense. Something else, too. This is kind of unrelated. We were just talking about New Jersey and tunnels, so I sort of figured this might have something to do with that as well. You hear about this story. This happened at the beginning of the month. I think, this story is dated April 30th. The morning of Saturday, April 30th. Traffic is moving quickly in and out of the Holland Tunnel this morning, but drivers trying to reach Manhattan on Friday night were subject to quite a different scene. Two suspects were in custody late Friday after gunfire erupted in the Holland Tunnel, snarling traffic throughout the region for hours, affecting thousands of travelers. My goodness. What on earth is going on? The rush hour this happened, forced the closure of the tunnel for several hours, causing a traffic backup that led to lane closings and detours on major highways in the Hudson County area. One suspect was shot, while two Port Authority police officers were not injured, but were taken to a hospital for observation. That's kind of unusual. Just the phrasing there. One suspect was shot. Two cops weren't injured, but were taken to a hospital. I assume the suspect who was shot was taken to a hospital. I don't know. The suspects, at this point, were not identified, but charges were expected to be filed. The incident unfolded at 6:10 p.m., after two Port Authority police officers stopped a Jeep vehicle just inside the Tunnel Toll Plaza in Jersey City. Four shots were fired by the officers, but officials could not say why the Jeep had been stopped or why the shooting started. "That's sketchy at this point," said an official. "There was no indication that either of the passengers in the Jeep had weapons." Yeah, weird, isn't it? They fired on a Jeep, they fired on these people that had no weapons, shut the tunnel down for hours, caused inconvenience to thousands of people, not to mention a very deadly situation, firing guns inside the tunnel. Neither rider in the Jeep was hit in the initial burst of gunfire, and then they drove off into the tunnel. You know, I gotta say, who wouldn't do the same thing if you're being fired at? Cops or no cops, and you don't have guns, and maybe there's some confusion as to what exactly is going on. Maybe you drive away, too. Anyway, the officers pursued through heavy rush hour traffic into the tunnel. I kind of wonder what that scene is like. It's rush hour traffic. True, it's going into the city instead of away from the city, but still, it's heavy. You can't really have much of a high-speed chase in a tunnel. But they managed to stop the vehicle. At some point, another shot was fired by an officer, hitting a suspect in the arm. Police did not say why this shot was fired. The wounded suspect then got out of the Jeep and jumped into the back seat of a nearby vehicle where he was apprehended. Doesn't really sound like these guys, even though they had all the guns, had any kind of handle on this situation, does it? Anyway, interesting thing about this is that they will not identify who the cops were. And this is something that cops always get away with. They get away with not identifying people involved in potential crimes or shootings or anything like that. They can just say, "No, we're not going to identify them. It's a secret. Tough luck." But they will identify anybody else. And that's why a day later, the story read that police fired on Jihad Saunders and Lorenzo Diaz. And they say the shooting was justified. They say the shooting took place at the entrance of the tunnel, but the sound reverberated for hundreds of feet inside, creating the impression that shots were fired inside the underwater causeway. They added to the two men were allegedly involved in a previous incident in Jersey City. And that's all they say. They don't say anything more than that. It's just very mysterious. When they pulled away in a 1994 Jeep Cherokee, they drew fire from the police and began a six-hour traffic nightmare for motorists. They drew fire. How do you draw fire exactly? You know, I'm not saying, it might sound like I'm completely dismissing the police side of this story. I'm just pointing out all these suspicious ways of reporting the story, not identifying people, being very vague in certain aspects of things. The crazy way of shooting at unarmed suspects. Now, they say at one point that an officer was being crushed up against the car, and that's why they had to fire at the person who was driving. Now, this is rush hour traffic. How does a cop pulling over a car manage to get himself in a situation where he's being crushed by the car that he's just pulled over, especially when there's another cop there? And then more shooting later on. Was he being crushed a second time? I don't know. Nobody knows because nothing else is being said. Anyway, the two suspects are being charged with numerous offenses and are currently being held in New York awaiting extradition to New Jersey. That's the story as of May 1st, anyway. But it just goes to show how when you have authority, you can get away with almost anything. The least of which is telling a story under your terms where you can say, yeah, we're not going to tell you that. We're not going to give you these names. We're not going to fill in these holes in the story. You just have to believe us. Oh, but here's all the information on the other people, and boy, they're guilty as hell, and they were involved in a previous incident. And sure, we're going to put everyone else's lives at risk by firing guns inside the Holland Tunnel or at the entrance or whatever. The point is, when you fire guns, many times they go other places. The bullets go other places. I'd say almost all times. Yeah. Speaking of authority, NATO. NATO authority. I saw these comments by Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin, and this is the first time I think he's ever said anything where I've sort of agreed with him and said, wow, that's I like the way you said that. And he's referring to a story that got overshadowed by the killing of Osama bin Laden, and that was the attempted killing of Muammar Gaddafi the day before. Putin said the coalition had gone beyond the bounds of a UN Security Council resolution authorizing intervention to protect civilians and suggested Gaddafi's actions did not justify foreign interference, let alone attempts to remove him. Here's one of the quotes. They said they didn't want to kill Gaddafi. Now some officials say, yes, we are trying to kill Gaddafi. Who permitted this? Was there any trial? Who took on the right to execute this man, no matter who he is? Yeah, when the entire so-called civilized community falls upon a small country with all its might, destroys infrastructure created over generations, I don't know, is that good or not? I don't like it. Now, Putin called Gaddafi's Libya crooked, but said that did not justify intervention. Look at a map of this region of the world. What is it full of Danish-style democracies? No, there are monarchical? Yeah, that's how you say it. There are monarchical, that's a tough word, states all over the place. This overall answers to the mentality of the population and the practices that develop there. Is there a lack of crooked regimes in the world? What, are we going to intervene in internal conflicts everywhere? I love the way he starts sentences with what like that. That's, I wonder if he's really doing that, if that's just a translation. Yeah. What, are we going to intervene in internal conflicts everywhere? Look at Africa. What's been happening in Somalia for many years? Are we going to bomb everywhere and conduct missile strikes? He said the resolution authorizing intervention in Libya was, quote, a call for everyone to come and do whatever they want. Why strike palaces? What, are they exterminating mice this way? This guy is amazing. Surely people are being killed in these strikes. Gaddafi is not there. He slipped away long ago, but peaceful civilians are dying. So, yeah, right on Vladimir Putin for that, at least. That's the first point you've gotten in quite a while. Now, this story here, wow. Actually, you know what? I'm going to slip into delay. I'm just going to quietly slip into delay. Give out the phone number, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB, if anybody wants to call in. You're welcome to. You're more than welcome to. And we'll put you on the air. You can tell us whatever you think about this story or other stories. But here's somebody to bring us into delay.
This is Father Guido Sarducci warning you that you listen to WSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. Got it?
And here we are on delay. Isn't that magical? 631-632-9872 is our phone number. This story, you might have heard about this one. Sorry, having a little bit of trouble with the headphones here, just making sure that everything is working. It's cutting in and out. I'm glad you can't hear it, but wow, it's really frustrating. These guys were on their way to North Carolina. They were going from Tennessee to North Carolina, and they were dressed up in Muslim attire. And they were yanked off the airplane. Incredible. An airline is investigating the removal of two imams from a flight headed to North Carolina, ostensibly because passengers felt uncomfortable with their presence and the fact that they were clad in Islamic attire. The incident occurred on Friday on an Atlantic Southeast Airlines flight from Tennessee to North Carolina. It involved Masadur Rahman and Mohammed Zaglar, who were wearing traditional Muslim dress. The two who hold high religious positions in the Muslim community were headed to North Carolina for, get this, a conference on prejudice against Muslims or Islamophobia. Yeah. Now, Rahman said to a TV affiliate that the incident reminded him of the prejudice Rosa Parks faced during the civil rights movement. That history I found today in that plane, and it shouldn't happen with any other person, he said. Now, Atlantic Southeast Airlines, operated by Delta, said the incident is under investigation and apologized for any inconvenience that this may have caused. Now, here's the thing. These guys, they went through security. They went through secondary security. They got on the plane. The plane was taxiing out. And then the plane turned around and taxied back. The TSA came on, pulled them off, and said the pilot was refusing to fly with them because passengers were uncomfortable with them on the plane. Then officials rescreened them, found they were no threat at all, and tried to put the guys back on the plane, but the pilot absolutely refused and ultimately took off. Now, this is incredible. It's since come out that, at least it appears, that no passengers were actually uncomfortable or reportedly uncomfortable, that it was all the pilot. But I got to say, you know what? If there are passengers out there who are this uncomfortable based on the way somebody looks, then I agree, they should be added to the no-fly list. No, not the people you're uncomfortable with. You should be added to the no-fly list because your closed-mindedness and simple-mindedness and overall stupidity are a threat. Who knows what you're going to do in midair if you don't like the way something looks or feels. Part of society is dealing with differences. People who can't deal with differences should avoid society. So just based on the way somebody looks, you throw somebody off an airplane. Incredible. Now, assuming that it wasn't passengers and it was just the pilot, that pilot needs to not fly anymore. Because that was an irrational act. Looking at somebody, looking at the way they're dressed and saying, yeah, that person's a terrorist or a potential terrorist and I'm not going to have them on my plane. Yeah, you know, you can say the pilot has ultimate control, but when he starts to be a little eccentric, irrational, then he starts to become a threat too. Who knows what he might do when he's in control of this airplane? And again, this is a situation where the pilot has not been identified. Yeah, Southeast Airlines has declined to identify the guy. And that leads me to the final point here. Southeast Airlines, they need to go if they're going to condone this kind of a thing. These guys were not on the no-fly list. They were not presenting any danger. They were cleared several times, more than anybody else probably, because of racial profiling. Let's face it, that's what it was. Found to be completely in the clear, probably safer than anybody else on the damn plane, and kicked off nonetheless. Yeah, you know what? That's not America. That's not the America that we supposedly are fighting and dying for in other parts of the world. No, I don't think so. You can't have it both ways. You can't say we're fighting for democracy and then curtail democracy. You can't say we live in an open society and then close off that society to keep it open in your warped perception. So I'm not clear if there's going to be any kind of a lawsuit or further action, but wow, it just it goes to show, you know, this kind of thing never ends, never stops. Look at that, no phone calls. Wow. Tell you, Long Island, you're pacified. People here are just dead to the world, I guess. All right, if there's anyone out there, Long Island or otherwise, 631-632-9872. Yeah, exciting things are happening. Milestones. And tune around the dial. You won't find many places that have an open phone line where you can reach the entire world. Get this. This is an interesting story that you might have heard about regarding the Bin Laden mission. There's a Hasidic newspaper published in Brooklyn. They erased the women in the picture. You saw the picture, right? That had Obama, Hillary Clinton, a whole bunch of other people. There were two women, Hillary Clinton being one of them, in that picture. And they just photoshopped or airbrushed them out so that it looks like they weren't in the room at all. And they say they were following Jewish modesty laws when they did that. The Brooklyn-based Der Zeitung sparked internet outcry, just internet outcry, not real-world outcry, after it published the iconic photo on Friday. The ultra-Orthodox newspaper released a statement on Monday apologizing if the edited image was seen as offensive, but said it was following Jewish modesty laws when it made the decision to delete Clinton and National Security Team member Audrey Thomason from historical record. We should not have publicized the altered picture. We have conveyed our regrets and apologies to the White House and to the State Department. They're more upset that they violated the rule of the White House that said the picture could not be altered. But, wow, this goes to show, you know, that things things are crazy everywhere. Oh, we have some phone calls. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Yeah, forgive me, but there are sets of pairs of uncles who are filing wrongful death suits against you, and you've pissed off the band Antebellum with your aunt antics.
Ah, okay. Well, that's kind of sobering news to find out. I honestly didn't know what you meant at first, but yeah, okay, yeah, the aunt... I just said I took care of them, okay? I didn't give away any more details than that.
You know, it's just terrible. They do one thing, say one thing and do another. It's a double standard.
Who, the ants?
They do one thing, say one thing and do another. It's a double standard.
Yeah. I think we're talking about people now, right?
Yeah, the terrorists.
Yeah, yeah.
The conference, just because they have a certain kind of dress. I noticed they didn't do that to Israelis on the plane, you know?
Well, I don't know if there were Israelis on the plane, but you always find people traveling different garb. Yeah, Hasidic people travel all the time. And what do you say if that makes somebody nervous? Well, it's not the problem with the Hasidic people. It's a problem with somebody who can't seem to deal with it. Maybe black people make you nervous. Maybe that kind of thing. And the thing everyone seems to forget is that there are many Muslims in the world, and they aren't all Arab. They aren't all one particular color. And you know what? If you were a terrorist, you honestly think that you'd dress up in a manner that would make close-minded people like this suspicious in the first place. No, you'd probably be blonde-haired and blue-eyed and wearing a suit and tie.
You recall when a rash of hijackings first started, the Hasidics would patrol, walk up and down the aisles of the plane on the KLM and other airlines.
I don't remember that, but...
Way back. Yeah, way back.
Under whose authority?
Probably 30 years ago, about.
Okay, well, I don't remember this at all, but, you know, it's possible, I suppose, but...
Uphold the good to fight off someone who may try to, before we're misunderstood, mm-hmm. who may try to hijack the plane.
Right.
All credibility to them.
Interesting. All right, listen, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for your call.
Sure.
And I want to thank the other people for calling in. So sorry we didn't get to you. But, you know, next time, be quicker, and we'll definitely pick up more phone calls. Yeah, you know, let's go out with somebody who definitely has been misunderstood over the years. Well, some of it is his own doing, but, he's not really on the no-fly list, but he definitely has trouble whenever he comes into the country or whenever you mention the name of Cat Stevens. But this song does bring back memories, doesn't it? We'll see you next week. OTW at 2600.com. Manuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Now I've been happy lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, I've been smiling lately, dreaming about the world at one. And I believe it could be someday it's going to come. 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Now I've been smiling lately, thinking about the good things to come. And I believe it could be something good has begun. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Peace train. Ooh, ooh.
Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump upon the peace train.
Ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh. Come on, the peace train. Get your bags together. Go bring your good friends too. Cause it's getting nearer. It soon will be with you. Come and join the living. It's not so far from you. And it's getting nearer. Soon it will all be true. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Slide on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh. Come on. Crying lately, thinking about the world as it is. Why must we go on hating? Why can't we live in bliss? 'Cause out on the edge of darkness, there rides a peace train. Oh, peace train, take this country, come take me home again. Oh, peace train sounding louder.
Ride on the peace train.
Come on, the peace train. It's peace train, holy roller.
Everyone jump up on the peace train.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Come on, come on, come on.
Yes, come on, peace train. Hey, yes, it's the peace train.
Hey kids, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution here every Tuesday night, 7 to 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight we're going to talk to director Josh Zeman of the film Cropsey. And if you stay tuned, you're going to get a chance to win some DVDs of this great horror film. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
These are oily thin eyes, sugar paste, let it form.